everyone. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to a special episode of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined today by Jeff Robinson.
What's up? Thanks for having me, Paul.
Yo, man, you are an international competitor.
In gaming, yes. Not in Warhammer. Not yet. I don't get to claim it. I've traveled the country.
Yeah, I left it open. You are a competitive gamer, like just through and through.
Yep, that's my day job.
Well, at least what I know you for is bringing what I would consider maybe unconventional list in the Warhammer world and still doing incredibly well with them.
Yeah, thank you. I'm mostly a Terranid and, you know, Adeptus Mechanicus-centric guy. So I think when you field armies like that, I mean, everyone talked about the War Convocation and 7th edition. So that was, I had my own take on it. I guess that's where the unconventional comes in. But for the most part, a lot of the same moving parts. And then with Terranids, prior to 8th edition, you really had to do some weird stuff to make that work. So I guess that's where I get a bit of that reputation.
It's hard not to like or not to have liked the War Convocation because they were such awesome looking figures. It had amazing rules and really gave you an advantage on the tabletop just in general.
It was a really, really cool finesse army. Like, it was one of those armies where if you saw someone running it, there was like two kinds of players you were about to hit. There was the person that just wanted to play ad mech, and that was probably the best way to do it. So, you know, whatever. Two knights are cool. One knight's cool. Bigger vanguard units. It's all fun. And those guys, probably not tournament winners, probably not the biggest or best players, but that army just gave them the tools to be somewhat mid-range competitive and have fun, which is really important in 7th edition because other armies did not have that ability. You know, you could just take the best thing you could with your Terranids or your like sisters, and I don't care who you are, you're probably going to get your butt handed to you. But the War Convocation allowed you to do that. And there's the other War Convocation player that's really practiced it and knows about those canticles and really gets the synergy going, and you felt rewarded for all those choices. So it was a really cool army.
And that's what I want to talk about, at least the army Adeptus Mechanicus on this episode. The Codex has just been released. I saw you playing on the Frontline Gaming channel.
Yeah. And yeah, I've got a couple games in, and we're building a couple things that I have a massive Adeptus Mechanicus collection, but the things that I didn't have were like Cydonian Dragoons and Electro Priests, certainly not 20 of them. So waiting a little bit for that, but I'm really excited to get them in my list and get playing.
So you are a fan of the models and the faction itself and not just the power it used to have. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. When it was first even rumored, because as everything in Warhammer, you know, we heard about it before we knew about it. I was just like, yep, I'm going to collect that no matter what it was. If it was a complete stinker, that'd be fine. The idea of robots and cyborgs and just the whole fluff behind Adeptus Mechanicus is way up there in terms of some of my favorite stuff.
When we see this book compared to some other things, you know, like Rabute Gilliman and lists built around that and some other things, you know, all the spoilers we've been hearing recently about Imperial Guard, Astromilitarum, and just stuff that may come out down the road, the Adeptus Mechanicus don't have, to me, those kind of like standout, amazing, like over the top rules. There seems to be still a lot of finesse built into this. And I wanted to get your take on that. And maybe not just like this unit can beat up the other unit type talk, but more along the lines in tournaments, what are some of the things that you would look at in the current codex that you would want to put into a list that you think would give you opportunities to win?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, addressing the first thing you talked about, I pretty firmly agree. I think there's a lot of people that when this book was coming out, they were looking for something of that special stat. I mean, we just got Mortarion. There's the Gilliman, you know, Magnus. There's some of these just heavy, heavy hitters. And we know that's not Call. We know that Call is a pretty darn good character, but he's not even as good as he was in 7th edition, where he was nigh unkillable, and that was really fun. His damage output wasn't amazing, but if he got within 12 of you with his strength 10 melta, you know, like a little gun, it was just ridiculous. Especially when you give him the Skyfire. I'm reminiscing. Sorry.
Yep, but sure. No, it's fine. It's context for where we're going right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can see those stinkers, and I can see that kind of feeling settling in with people. Canticles are mega toned down. Of the six, you know, getting a cover save, especially in 8th edition, where that's not nearly as big of a deal, is nice, but it's no shrouding, right? And then the other ones just don't have the same level of impact that the canticles used to have. So I can see a lot of people looking at that and being a little bit disenfranchised with it. But I'll tell you what, I'm actually really enthused, and it's for a few reasons, and I'll get into exactly what you were talking about. But first and foremost, the tenacious durability of this codex is really, really fun, but very useful in 8th edition. Because I think if of the things that are missing in 8th edition, defensive play is a little bit too toned down, in my opinion. And that's what leads to a lot of the Alpha Strike lists. A lot of, like, if you go to a tournament that doesn't have good line of sight blocking, you're probably going to, at some point in time, encounter an army where, especially if they go first, you're just not having a good time. You get hit so hard that the game's decided on that first turn. Now, as the codexes are coming out, that's happening less and less. And I think a big proponent of that is this Admech Codex. You get your Canticles at the top of the battle turn. So that's, if you're going second, you still get them. A lot of the Castellans start in Aegis Protocol, which means they have a 2-up save, 4-up invul on a tough 7 model with 6 wounds just to start. So there's a lot of really cool options of like, well, they can see my Castellans, go ahead and shoot at them. You know, have fun with that. They have a 1-up save and a 4-up invul in some situations, especially with Mars / Call.
That's a great point. I can just pause you right there for a second. I did not even think about that, a bit of durability of a really good reason why you would roll Canticles at the start of the battle round, like not on your turn. This happens before your opponent gets to do anything to you. You're positioned with something. It might not be the best because, you know, you either pick, but you can pick.
You can. And then you can random the next one and you get that same one again. You can just never pick it again. So if you're about to get Alpha Struck really hard, you can be like, all right, Canticles, I'm picking Shroud Song. And, you know, I think you have to roll. You don't get to pick the second one if you're Mars. And the second one's only a bonus for the Mars contingent of your faction or your, you know, these words are like,
yeah, your detachments. I think people are going to get what you're saying.
Yes. The ability to pick and reliably go for that, like I said, is the defensive stuff that has been lacking. And as far as what you're saying in terms of like some of the standouts in this codex, for me, it is going to be that word synergy. It's there's no question about it. I am disappointed that like Call should be more of a bad. It's 250 points. He should have a 5-up feel of pain, something like that. He just doesn't. So that's a little bit of a pooper. And then, I guess like I was saying earlier, what are they called? The Canticles? Ugh.
Well, you're coming off that Warcon high, man. Like, now, you are not alone, but you are coming off that Warcon high. And yeah. it's a different game. I think the face you probably just made is the same, like, you know, suck it on a lemon that a lot of Gladius players faces may have too.
It's a little bit of looking over the fence at the greener grass. Like they didn't hold back with Gilliman. You know, like he has everything. He gives so much, but then you look at the Canticles and they're like, well, hold on now. Let's really dial this back. I don't want to go crazy. Let's give him reroll ones in close combat. Or, you know, the one where it's like you roll for each unit within 1 inch of a guy of a unit. It's on a 6. They take D3 mortal wounds on a 6. Give me back to strength 4 attacks where it's just that was a really cool. Anyways,
it is enough it's about subdued. That. No, it's not. It is subdued to where it's not. Well, I guess there's two sides to it. You know, sometimes you can fish for it. And we're talking about Call right now. And Call certainly helps you fish for whatever it is that you happen to need. But it's a little bit more difficult for the other Forge World dogmas to get the exact right thing.
I mean, he gives the reroll aura, which with his Warlord trait is 9 inches. It's pretty incredible, especially, and I'll talk about this in a second, but the firepower you can put out with the Deathless Mechanicus is up there in the top tier. I think everyone compares everything to like a guard artillery gun line, and of course, it's not of that level, but it's not far below that. And especially in like a Dawn of War, or if your opponent just has a certain kind of army, 5 or 6 Castellans shooting with Wrath of Mars, where on a 6 they're doing a mortal wound and they're rerolling to hit, is going to drop anything in the game. You can do as many as 108 shots, strength 6, minus 2, 1 damage, ignore cover, with 6s doing mortal wounds, rerolling to hit. It's overkill, actually. In that game you were referencing, the stream game against Frankie, I overkilled Mortarian by too much. So it ended up being one of the reasons why, you know, that's one of the things we have to practice. But anyway, some of the gems of the codex that I really do like, I am a huge fan of kind of the stock things, Dune Crawlers, I think everyone knows about that. Even with the index, they were pretty good. It's going to be that point cost. At only 130 points, they're just pretty darn good for what they do.
Mentioned this on a show that I did, but just continue with the point, but I want to let you know that I think I share a sentiment that these guys suffer on the vehicle game. The game right now is like, if you've got a good vehicle, you're in a good place with 8th edition. And these guys, they don't have a lot to choose from, but their couple of vehicle-like things are really good.
Yes. If the Onager was like 180 points, I'd be way more off the train on it. But the fact that it's so dirt cheap and it's just, it's either good against Skyfire, it's good anti-armor, which is kind of, Adeptus Mechanicus doesn't lack that, but certainly that extra punch is really nice. It's just amazing. So I run them in Icarus because I think the DACA, especially with Call giving reroll, is really good. And then meta-wise, it's really important to have Skyfire because in certain situations, you're just like, oh, okay, you have the two Storm Ravens. Well, this game's like really good for me right now because usually those lists, unless it's like a Last Cannon Gilliman gunline, don't have a good way of dropping Onagers either. And then you can, you know, put them out of line sight, etc. But really good there. I think the Cydonian Dragoons, a lot of people are talking about that. I saw a couple articles on Belboss Souls, and people know about it.
What do they do, and why are they sticking out to you?
Well, they're so dirt cheap. A unit of six of them is 408 points with the Taser Lance. And on the when you attack with them, they're strength 8, minus 1, 2 damage. And that's amazing. So on sixes, they do 3 hits instead of just 1 with only 3 attacks. That by itself is not super incredible. But then you can give them a stratagem, which for only 1 command point, on they hit on twos, and then on a 4+, they activate the 3 hits. So a unit doing 18 attacks on average is now doing, it's like 27 more attacks or something like that.
And this is the Walker guys, the guy with the lance.
Yep. That already moved 10 inches and they already are tough 6, which is okay. They're minus 1 to hit at shooting, which is okay. If you take them in a Stygies detachment, all of a sudden they're minus 2 to hit at 12 inches. So they're, you know, orcs just actually can't shoot them.
Ability. I think it really, especially with the with something like the Ad Mech where they want to sit back anyway.
Yep. And what they're worried about is being charged from Alpha Legion, stuff like that. So as a counter charge unit, they're huge. I think one of the biggest secret sauces with them, though, is that you want to take them with Stygies because that's minus 2 to hit at 12 inches. So great anti-alpha strike again. But then you can also, for 1 command point, infiltrate them. An 8th edition infiltrate is you literally deploy them and then they move normally and attack normally. So there's unless you have a screen unit, there's nothing that can stop them from charging. And the natural answer for a lot of people is they'd be like, well, of course, I'd have a screen unit. It's like, yes, you would. So I would charge and kill that screen unit easily for probably 2 command points. And then you have 6 vehicles that are minus 2 to hit, tough 6, 6 wounds that are looking down the barrel at you. And oh, by the way, behind that is 5 Gesellans, 2 Onagers, Call, and a bunch of sniper rifles and troops. What do you do? It's not like it's such a simple and easy game at that point, right?
The Dragoons don't degrade either. They work like Dreadnoughts and Sentinels to where they've got a decent toughness and a handful. They got, 6 wounds? Is it 6?
6 wounds. 4 up saved, so not great, but they'll mostly be, under the Shroud Psalm or whatever. So shooting into them is really bad. And then, of course, if you have someone that can swing, they're going to drop one or two of them down depending on what kind of thing they're swinging with. But the hope is that you're charging them and wiping out whatever it is that would otherwise cause them problems.
Well, the tactic you just described is if you put those things on the table and if someone realizes they're going to stack up all those hits, it's going to immediately affect how they deploy. So you're getting them to kind of play your game, exactly. which is a big component of winning more games and winning tournaments.
And Paul, like the amazing host that you are, that segues really beautifully for me into my next unit, which is the Rangers, dropping them down to 8 points as a troop choice. You get 5, so that's 40 points for a troop selection. With a 30-inch gun, that's not bad, but what really makes me love them is for 25 points, you give them a transonic arquebus, and now you're talking about like range infinity, strength 7, minus 2, D3 damage sniper rifle. And what I love about this is on paper, that's pretty good. A lot of people boo-hoo snipers. They're like, no, I've had it happen so often where I shoot them, and wouldn't you know it, it just doesn't wound. It's like, yeah, I get that. So I understand. But you take them in the Stygies detachments. Now they're minus 1 to be shot at. That's another way to make them unattractive for people. A lot of times they'll have that plus 1 cover save. And then you are facing that guard player. You are facing Gilliman. And now they're deploying Gilliman in a place to your point where they're out of line of sight or they're behind this wall. And you're starting to control their deployment because they're worried about your sniper rifles. And then, oh yeah, they're worried about 6 infiltrating Cydonian Dragoons. And now you're really starting to control space and time. And then the rest of your army is very durable. So if you play to the mission and they're hunkered down in the corner, it gives you ways to win the game, which is more dynamic than just, well, with this army, I have to charge them and kill them. Or with this army, I have to shoot them to shit before they get to me. Otherwise, I'm in trouble. And I love Warhammer 40K that way. If you have choices and you're applying pressure at the deployment stage to your opponent, you're talking about a list that can go far. I like it.
So in this situation, okay, now you've got a lot of different ways. Are you saying you're going to have the Rangers, the Dragoons, and the Dune Crawlers and Castellans all on the same list? And how are you splitting them up faction-wise? Or how are you splitting them up Forge World dogma-wise, if at all?
Yeah, I'll just straight up tell you my list because I'm really excited about it. There's two variations I'll work on, but it's two detachments. It's Mars, Call, and then Engine Sierra is HQ, and I'll talk about that in a second because that's pivotal for all the AdMech players that are wanting to get an army. There's a piece of advice that you just right out the gate have to do, and none of us have these freaking models, but I'll talk about it in a second. So that's your two HQs. Your three troops are, for me, it can be Vanguard. They're 1 point more expensive. It's more DACA. The minus one toughness is nice. I'll probably experiment with that. But I'm just doing three units of Rangers. Again, the rapid fire range 30, that's all really cool. The one less point, I like it. They have a 6-up invul, don't forget about that. So that's okay, but that's fine. And I run them stock, by the way, just no arquebuses on them. You could do the reroll with Call. The reason I don't is because I don't necessarily want my Rangers next to Call because I'd like to spread them out beyond objectives, you know, cover up board space as opposed to just having this gigantic blob of guns.
Right.
And then I usually put I put the Castellan unit there. So it's five Castellans in this list, all DACA. It comes out to 550 points because I run them at 110. I do that so that they can do the Wrath of Mars because that is, in a pinch, you're like, oh no, I'm facing the ABC named giant demon. Well, put all five of them into it with the Wrath of Mars. You might not kill it per se, but you're going to come damn close.
What's the Wrath of Mars do for folks that may not have the book yet?
Two wound rolls of six cause immortal wounds.
And you're shooting them, an incredible large amount of shots. And so just math says you're getting a few extra mortal wounds in there.
Each of them have nine shots. And if you shoot twice, which you can do with a stratagem, you switch over to it, but then you can't switch out of it. So you want to be in a good spot. They can shoot twice. So it's 18 shots each guy times five, which is 90, I think.
And call it your reroll misses?
Reroll misses.
Or reroll ones, which is
misses.
Misses.
Man. The actual funny thing, and we'll just say this, but it's going to get fixed because it's a typo, but it actually says he allows you to reroll to hit. So if someone has a minus one or something like that, it doesn't matter because you just get the reroll to hit. But that's going to be fixed. That's not intended. So.
And that's a function of the game to where the modifiers get applied after in this edition.
Right.
And so if if you need threes to hit and you roll threes, the minus one doesn't make you miss. It does, but you don't get to reroll that because you actually rolled to hit.
Yeah, you wouldn't normally because the way it's worded for everybody else is reroll misses. But for him, it's just a reroll to hit. So
right. You'll
be like, you know what? I'll choose to reroll that. You could choose to reroll sixes if you liked, but you probably shouldn't. anyways, so that's the Castellans. And then in that detachment, so I have the Engine Seer, Call, the three troops, Castellans. And I think that's all I run in that. Oh, no, actually. So this is the choice you can make. And then I run two Icarus Dune Crawlers. I'm okay with them being next to Call. Rerolling to hit's a big deal. Obviously, if they're shooting a flyer, hitting on twos, and very often rerolling ones from Canticles is not the biggest of deals. But the minus one to hit on a Dune Crawler, putting it in the Styges attachment, which I'll talk about in a second, is like, you don't get the reroll to hit. So if you're playing a game where they're not having flyers, all of a sudden you're hitting on fours. So I put them in the Mars, but that's something someone could be like, you're an idiot. I put it in the Styges. Okay, fair enough.
Well, having reliable lots and lots of wounds hanging out in the back firing for conceivably three or four turns, even if someone's firing at it. I mean, there's value in that. So I can see both sides.
And Call repairs better, and the Engine Seer repairs as well. I mean, they can only receive the healing once per turn, but in my few test games so far, that's actually been a big deal, because if something shoots at a Dune Crawler, very rarely do they drop it in one volley of shooting. Now, if they put their whole army into it, they probably will, but then they put their whole army into a Dune Crawler. So there's cool scenarios. And then the second detachment is Styges. It's two Engine Seers as the HQs, just as cheap troops cheap HQs to fill that out. And then it's three units of Rangers. Two of them have two arquebuses. So the criticism against that, of course, is that it's a min troop choice with two 25 point upgrades. So it's fairly expensive. And Styges, they're minus one to hit. And I've just, you know, my list is tight in points, but that's pretty good so far. That could be something we change around, but we'll see.
Well, do you find that two sniper rifles is enough to take out a commissar? Because you think it is? Because I find people kind of like living that dream of, oh, I'm going to take my one sniper, my two snipers, my one vindicare, and I'm going to do something. Is it enough?
Well, in my list, it's four arquebuses.
Oh, four. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Okay. I was thinking, yeah, I'm with you. That is enough. Or I think it's enough.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, dice happen for sure, but it's either three or four. I don't have it off the top of my head. I think it's actually four.
More than two. I'm sorry. I thought I heard two.
Yeah, it's more than two. I almost am certain it's four, but that's a lot. It's really good. And what I like about them, by the way, too, as a further, like, if they need to be sold even harder, the strength seven means they're actually pretty darn good against vehicles. Like, they're not actually, they're good against everything, basically. So yes, you want to snipe out characters because that's something you otherwise wouldn't get to do, but the utility of them is just phenomenal because they get to do so much. So that's the troop choices. And then I put the six, Cydonian Dragoons in there with Taser Goads. I think they come out to something like 68 points a model. It's 408 for the unit. But that's just so dirt cheap. And then they're minus two to hit at 12 inches. Very durable. They can infiltrate. That's huge. That's the heavy. I think that's actually the whole list.
So your pieces that are going to be doing a lot of work for you over the course of the game, are protected from Alpha Strike, which is not something a lot of other armies get to do right now.
They're extremely durable. Castellans are ridiculous in terms of durability. And again, like I said, there's so much repair across the board too that... even if stuff is getting on top of them and hurting them, there's very often a very good chance that they just get repaired up. So especially if you face an opponent that, for whatever reason, is shooting at multiple targets, they're doing almost nothing in a lot of cases.
So the Electro Priests there, are they're just – I mean, I know they do a little bit of healing.
Engine Seers.
The Engine Seers. I do want to talk about the Electro Priest in a second. But the Engine Seers, are they doing anything other than just filling that troop slot and healing for you?
So that's the thing I want to talk
any
about.
Any relics you're picking for them or whatever? I mean...
Yeah, I have one modeled differently because you can't give Call a relic. So I'm going to give the different one in the Stygies the better healing thing. It's just like you get to reroll the heal roll. He automatically does one or something like that, or plus one. It's okay. None of the relics are super ridiculously amazing. You should never pay for more because any one of them is kind of cool flavor. There's some ridiculous ones like I think it's Lucius has one that you can once per game teleport 30 inches on the character. So it's not like other armies where it's like, oh wow, I got this guy with the power fist and he's got the shield eternal and he'll teleport in there and just really wreak havoc. No, you could do that with like a Dominus and be like, Dreadnought, good evening. And then it's just like, you know, bopping someone on the head with an Omnisci axe and not really having that big of an impact. But where it is cool is like Relic or someone thinks they're about to get Warlord and then whoop, you're 30 inches away behind a wall. That's pretty amazing.
Or maybe scooting over, get like an Emperor's Will type objective or something.
Exactly. Yeah, there's some cool application. But you are then also taking a relic in the Lucius attachment, which is really amazing for what you were asking about. I'll get to that in a second, but about the Electro Priest. But Engine Seers, Admech players, you just have to go buy two or three of them. You just have to. I love Call, so I'm always going to make a list with Call. I don't think he's the best model in the game, but he's really powerful, and he's just a gorgeous, awesome model with great fluff.
He heals any Imperium, so if you've got a Knight or a Leman Russ, I mean... any a Leviathan Dreadnought, which I'm in love with right now, he can repair that stuff.
Yep. But yeah, so that's kind of cool. The main thing is that bottom line, they're 52 points, each of the Engine Seers, and they're fairly durable. They're okay. But your other alternative is a Dominus or Call, and that's it. And that's where a lot of people, I think, are very legitimate in having a complaint. Because a Dominus bottom dollar is like 135, I think, maybe 125 points. That's pretty expensive. They're not terrible, but that's expensive. Or it's Call, which is 250 points. And then you have an Engine Seer, and those are your three HQ.
You're making me check. I'm going to jump over. So the Tech Priest Engine Seer says, at the end of your movement phase, this model can repair a single friendly Forge World vehicle, Astromilitarum vehicle, or Questor Mechanicus model within 3 inches.
So not Imperium.
Not Imperium. At least not generic Imperium anyway.
Right.
A good portion of it. And then Call says at the end of your movement phase, Belisarius Call can repair a single friendly Imperium model within 3 inches, but not himself.
Because he heals himself anyways.
Yeah. It gets one wound back if it's Imperium. If it's Adeptus Mechanicus, it gets D3 lost wounds.
Yeah. So pretty sick. And then to your point about Electro Priest, that's the other list I'm writing that I'm really excited about. Because I think in a big part of the reason why I ran Libby Conclave with my AdMech in 7th, A, it's powerful, I get that. But B, the biggest weakness, in my opinion, of AdMech is that like Eldar jet bikes, you know, just the MSU style list you'll face, they don't get out there and deal with the table very well. They're not fast. They don't see behind stuff. They don't have ignores line of sight type of weapons unless you ally in some guard or something like that. So if you run pure AdMech like I do, you're going to have a tough time on missions where you have to go out there, foot slog it to an objective and hold it or stop somebody from doing that. Where that gets remedied a little bit is with Lucius. For one command point, you can deep strike something. And everyone's talking about this because I think it's really phenomenal. Deep striking 20 shooty electro priests is, again,
this is the Corpuscari electro priest, yes, with their electrostatic gauntlets.
Yep. It's three shots, range 12. On a six, it's three hits instead of one. And that's ridiculous. That's a bajillion shots. Strength 5, no AP, 1 damage. So not like the most stellar thing you've ever heard in your life. But then they're also fairly defensible. Only tough 3 is going to be the problem with them. So DAC is going to be an issue. But a 5-up save and a 5-up feel no pain. And then you got 20 bodies. They're getting around the table. They're actually pretty okay in close combat because the gauntlets basically have the same stat line in close combat as well. And that's pretty cool. For my first list, I ultimately went with the Cydonian Dragoons because I think that might be better because infiltrating and more durability and on a kind of a tougher to hit and wound chassis has me a little bit more excited. But I have 20 of those priests being painted up, and I fully plan on checking out that list as well.
Well, their weapons are assault. So it's assault 3. So they can, yeah, even if you're not deep striking them, they can move a fair clip across the board and still be some type,
yep,
of threat.
Yep.
I think these are a standout unit. A sleeper unit, yeah, I guess I should say. Because nobody has them yet, so I haven't seen them on the table.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Everyone's buying them up or painting them or converting them. They're 14 points a model, which puts them a little bit on the expensive end. But, I mean, if they're any cheaper than that, it would be stupid. So 20 of them is 280 points. So in the list I just talked about, that saves you 128 points, which is pretty cool. There's a lot of stuff you can do with that. You can go with,
that's almost another Dune crawler.
Yeah, another Dune crawler. And you can easily find the points for that too. I think my list has just straight up 15 points not even spoken for. And then I think I put 21 points of Omnispecs on the Rangers, which is not essential. It's okay. Like, having them ignore cover is nice because oftentimes what they're shooting at will be in cover. But that's not like a, Jeff, I saw you have Omnispecs. Just tell me about it. It's like, wow, man, they're so amazing. Like, no, it's not like that. But there's some point leeway is what I'm trying to say.
I get you. I'm glad you brought up these Electro Priests. Again, I haven't seen them because I think that they weren't something that people had. But the model looks really cool.
Oh, they're sick. Yeah.
Just some awesome. It's like, it's that iconic, like, John Blanche art come to life, yes, on a model, which this whole army is, but especially those guys. They've been like in the, yep, background of 100 different pictures. And so it's kind of neat. They've got actually what I think are competitive rules. And you mentioned even in close combat, they have 2 attacks apiece. So
yeah,
there is a potential that you're going to get 6s to get those extra hits.
Yep. They can hurt anything. You said they're assault. So you drop in 9.1 away, range 12, reaches its target. So if you're facing like a knight list or some kind of super heavy, putting a million shots out there.
That's it. I mean, you're just rolling dice. And yeah, with the way to manipulate some of the rolls, even with command points and whatever, and then with the stratagems, I think you're going to get some use out of these guys if you feel like fielding them.
And the close combat ones are really good. They're 4 points more, but if they kill a unit, all of a sudden they become a 3-up invul with that feel no pain. And they're actually a little bit scarier in terms of their damage output because they do D3 mortal wounds on a 6 to wound.
That is crazy. 2 attacks apiece, plus 2 strength, D3 damage, -2 AP on their staff. It's the Electro, yeah, Leech Stave. And each time you make a wound roll of a 6+ with this weapon, the target suffers D3 mortal wounds instead of, it's not in addition to, it's instead of the normal damage.
Okay. I mean, it'd be probably big time overkill otherwise.
I mean, but D3 mortal wounds there's nothing to sneeze at.
No, that's what I was saying. It's really good. If it was in addition to D3 damage, yeah, on D3 attacks, whatever, it would be ridiculous. But I like them in a Styges detachment as well. Very good for countercharge. They can be like Castellan bodyguards, or you can infiltrate them and go ahead, give me a screen unit. And if there is a screen unit, they'll chop them up. And now they have a 3-up invul with Feel No Pain. And yeah, again, DAC is a bit of an issue, but I mean, 3-up invul, we've seen what can happen with that. Sometimes you're like, wow, I can't believe I haven't failed one in 65 rolls.
That's the advice used to give people back when power armor was real. Yeah. You know, it's like sometimes you just make all those 3+s.
Or you make none. I know that's the other side of the coin. We've all seen that too, where you're like, oh, it's a 3-up save, failed 9. You're like,
let me be clear. I'm not making any 3+s. My opponent is going to make a lot of 3+s. But yeah, these are, I guess, sleeper units. I mean, that's the best way to describe them because,
yeah,
I mean, they are a little bit on the point side, but they give you some kind of effective, like, reach out and touch someone.
And mortal wounds are such a big deal in this edition because, yeah, things like Magnus, which you're reliably going to face, now has a power to get him to a 3-up invul. And you're not really going to reliably get through that unless you can dish out mortal wounds.
That's exactly where I was going. Exactly. Because you are some, this just cuts right to the chase. You know, where you're taking some damage, and sometimes that's enough to drop them down to a different category. So they're hitting you less, they're worse on the next turn, or finish them off. If you're, cause there's nothing worse than like Magnus running around with one wound left and just wrecking your face.
And there's a lot of, I mean, you're going to face him. So that's why, even just bouncing around a little bit, I really do like the Icarus Array Onagers. With that 3-up invul, no, you're not going to do a lot of damage to him, but it's got a missile that does D6. It's got the autocannon that is 2 damage, and then it has the DACA missiles that do 1 damage, but all of it's fairly high strength as well, and hitting on 2. So you're very reliably just sitting back there, you know, like doing 4, 5, 6 damage to him each turn. And like you said, that's that degrade, that's the worry. But if you also have the Electrostaff Priest as your countercharge unit, which you're going to find use for, by the way, because that's what people want to do to add mech. It's not just Magnus, but people are going to want to get in there. What a scary backfield unit that is, where it's like, go ahead, deep strike anything. You're not going to shoot them. And then when I charge you and kill you with these guys, they become the Terminator.
that's a fair point. Now, in this book, there's also a way to kind of blend knights into them.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's a worthwhile investment to consider it? Is there a situation or an environment where you would consider the knights in your list?
I am personally so excited about getting models out there that I've never played with, like Cydonian Dragoons. I think it's a very competitive list. So I'm excited about that too. But I do also own a bunch of knights. For right now, with the way it's worded, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, you basically only get to run the stock knights, like the Crusader, the Warden, and those guys, that's cool, and they're definitely better in this list, so I think that's a strong carrot for people. For me personally, I find the Forgeworld knights like more interesting and fun, aka powerful. not that the Crusader's a bad knight, or any knight really, but they're just more powerful. They don't gain any benefits here, like I said, unless I'm wrong. But,
well, it's Quester Mechanicus is the where it keys off of.
I mean, while you're looking up, though, the point is you could absolutely make a competitive list with one of the knights. The relocation stratagem of their ion shield, talking about durability again, that's that 4-up invul everywhere on the knight against shooting attacks. I don't know that people have an issue with their knights getting blown up turn one, but for instance, if you were to, you would want to run them in an admech detachment so that you can get access to that, because that's incredible. There's another stratagem where they count as full health. Talk about something that could completely swing a game. Like, you're in late game, your knight's down to its final last couple of wounds, your opponent's really counting on it not hitting or doing well. Pop that stratagem and all of a sudden they have a full health kind of knight. Dealing out that damage, that's incredible.
Oh, swinging at full attacks with hitting on, you know, its original 3+ or whatever is, I think that could really put a crimp in somebody's game. It is Quester Imperialis in the Forgeworld books, not Quester Mechanicus. No.
Oh, okay. All right, there it is.
I think that's what's gonna keep it out. So whoever informed you of that, I think is correct.
Okay, so it's a nice little thing, and I think, if someone listening is like, well, I always run a robot with mine, because, you know, Warcon, that's what we did, I think you're okay. That's not a bad thing. Knights are still super powerful in this edition. There's still a place for them, and those stratagems do give you some cool tools. And then there's just, they were smart because it would have been stupid, but if you could, like, repair them 3 or 4 times a turn, that would obviously be very dumb. But there still is access to repairing them. I believe.
Can orcs do that to their stompas and stuff? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have it in front of me.
But you can make your knight a really unattractive thing to shoot at, is I guess the point I'm trying to make. It can have a 4-up invul. It can have the ability to be repaired, I think, D3 with a reroll, maybe +1, something like that. Very good stuff.
Well, a knight in the right matchup is just an extreme bully.
Yep.
And I think if no one ever plays with knights, and then the meta, and I'm using kind of air quotes, shifts away from things that deal with them as easy as they do now, then the guy that shows up with him is king that day.
Yep. That's part of what makes the tournament scene really fun, is that there's sometimes a meta that pops up that's really frustrating, but then the meta responds to that, and there's that one guy like, no, I didn't change. Now's my time.
Fair enough. But I guess where I'm at with him is that I think that the strength of the admech is really in the admech, and that I think the strength of the knights is probably going to come later in like some white dwarf supplements or something.
Yeah, and what do you think too? Because I think one of the kind of interesting questions that you kind of just naturally pose these days, if you, especially if you're a very competitive player, is does AdMac add anything to be allied with or to ally in as the ally, I guess what I'm asking. And for me personally, and I'd be interested to hear your answer too, I don't feel like they are. I feel like they're pretty points dense. Maybe like a detachment of Stygies, Cydonian Dragoons can add something to another person's list, or Lucius dropping in, 280 points worth of shooty Electro Priest. But outside of that, I don't see people doing something like, well, I've got a couple of Onagers and Call because I just, I'm really worried about the air stuff. Like, that doesn't make sense to me,
I think you're right. I think that once you decide you want to play AdMech, then I think your list is going to start with the Castellan Robots.
Yeah.
And then once you buy a block of those, and then you start to build a detachment that includes those, you're about 1,000 points in.
Yeah, a whole detachment for sure. The unit, shooty, or close combat, by the way, which we didn't talk about, but Reese really likes that.
There's a lot of cool. The robot fist or whatever.
Well, you leave them in Aegis, and they're just very defensible, stomping around. They have 8 movement, which is kind of silly, because I think if you look at a Castellan, you just kind of mentally imagine it moving very slowly. Those guys haul ass. Anyways, yes. And then like min troops, couple HQ, it's like 800 and some odd points. It's really inexpensive for how much durability and strength you get.
I think it's great. I'm just saying, I don't think there's a lot of points left over for you to start sprinkling in other factions or even call them an ally to something else. That's, you're playing AdMech at that point.
I feel like what people could do and would be good to do, if you were to ally anything to AdMech, it would be, and this is like the most boring answer in the history of mankind, because you could ally this to anything, is Guard. Just cheap access to long-range weaponry that doesn't need line of sight is something that shores up their weakness. I wouldn't go like 1,200 points of Guard, because I think, I don't know that AdMech adds anything to that at that point in time.
What are you getting for that? I mean, that's like 15 mana cores.
Yeah. I think you're, it's 35, if the math is correct. Yeah, it's a lot of them. I just think, like, even what we're seeing from Guard right now, like mortar teams and stuff like that, drop plasma. No, I wouldn't do any of that. I would just do some light artillery. And I couldn't roll my eyes harder as I say this. But again, what list doesn't benefit from one or two units of 30 conscripts as a screen, or just hogging an objective and sitting on it? So if you're really, really hardcore and you want to blend your AdMech, that's the route I would go.
Well, we are talking about ways to win tournament games with AdMech. Yeah. And if you could spend conceivably whatever a commissar is or what it's going to be when the book comes out, and then a handful of conscripts, whatever they are when the book, it's you're really only diverting, I mean, let's call it 200 points. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but let's call it 200 points. And I don't think that's taking a lot out of your AdMech core. You're still going to be playing an AdMech list, and you might pick up an extra game that day during a 3-rounder tournament.
Absolutely. And that would be a list of have fun with your target priority. Nobody wants to shoot into conscripts with that commissar standing right there. And then the rest of the AdMech list that we just talked about has so many options for good luck and have fun shooting at that. It's not, I love it. It's so cool that that's the kind of list you can build. My other army's Tyranids, where it's like anything you shoot at, I'm cringing the whole time. Like, no, not those guys.
Well, that's one. I'll close this out with talking about a little about your Tyranid stuff, but I do want to ask you: are there any other stratagems in the AdMech book that you really have your eye on because there's a lot. I mean, what are there? There's a ton of stratagems in all books, and it's difficult to, I think, have them all memorized and know when to use them right in the game. So what I kind of ask that people do is find a few and then have them in your back pocket, and know when to use them.
There's a couple of really cool ones that are very interesting. One is you get to auto explode your vehicle when it dies. So you don't even roll for it. You just use this one stratagem point and it just does blow up. Very situational, but I've been in a handful of games where that roll is a big deal, and it's something that'll completely blindside your opponent, because not many people are counting on the 6, but if you can just be like, boop, blows up, D3 mortal wounds, or whatever the vehicle is, sometimes D6, that's a big deal, especially if it's hitting, the key last couple of wounds on that Magnus we were talking about earlier.
You've got your Doomcrawler on an objective, and so people have to kill it to be able to score it, and so they're going to get over there anyway. Or
it's
try
a big
to.
Deal. Yeah. There's a couple others. There's one that's going to really, this is like, it's funny talking about this because there's going to be people that, depending on how I talk about it, it's like, I hate his soul. It's like, I get you. there is a stratagem where you get to intercept with a infantry unit within 12 inches of something that deep strikes. I don't feel like you, at the beginning of the game, have to like grab your opponent by both his shoulders or hers and go, listen, I have access to intercept. But if they, you know, like if they ask the question, do you have interceptor? Of course, I'm going to be like, yes, I do. It's the stratagem right here. So I'm not going to blindside people, but I'm also not going to like explain to them my 45,000 stratagems or whatever. But if you do a full unit of Vanguard or a full unit of Rangers, because they're not intercepting and hitting on sixes, you could actually, like, that sorcerer and that unit of warp talents, yeah, they won't get warp time. Or you'll kill actually the unit if you have three plasma calibers in there or, you know, three arquebuses. So that's a kind of cool little block to do that we finally have access to. And is, again, in that theme of defensive play in a codex and in an edition where you don't have that as much.
I like that a lot. Well, I guess if we can, we'll change gears. You also mentioned that one of your loves is Tyranids, and you have a beautiful Tyranid army, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
I've got to play against it. I really like the way it looked. What are you hoping happens with Tyranids?
Oh, man. Okay, so let's...
We're just putting it out there into the, you know, into the mind share, you know.
So I'll talk for the next 5 hours. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, Tyranids 8th edition. Yeah, Tyranids 8th edition are really cool. I love what they did with them. I just took them to Nova. I considered it a fun tournament for me because I think in this edition, if you don't have a codex and you're expecting to win tournaments, that's a hard thing to do. I'm not saying it hasn't been done. It obviously has, but it's limiting. Now, if a tournament has good terrain, then it becomes a lot more possible. But anyways, I digress. Tyranids are awesome. They finally made Gene Sitters really scary, really cool. My hopes and dreams for the Tyranid release, which is supposed to be coming pretty soon, is like really sexy and cool stratagems and quote unquote chapter tactics. So like, I would love it if there was some kind of infiltrator hive fleet where, I mean, and there is a theme here. They've been doing that, right? Like we got Stygies and we got Lucius. That's, you know, we got the Alpha Legion. We have.
Oh, you know, Raven, there's going to be a way to put the Swarm Lord right next to somebody or whatever and a Brood Lord. And
at least Gene Stealers or something. I do like that thematically. I like that option.
Yeah. It's creepy. I mean, I flashbacks to Gene Stealers over the ages, but it all goes back to the movie Aliens. I mean, it's crazy. I don't want them next to me. And that's a fear factor that I want back in the game.
And they're a meta shakeup that I think that needs to happen as well. I won a lot of games at BAO and Nova, not because of Tyranids, but because all the lists were not taking Tyranids into account. They were like, oh, well, I don't know how to deal with 40 Hormagaunts because I was worried about Magnus and two knights or something, you know, and I won several games that way. And that's what's fun about Tyranids. And in that codex, very exciting. We are getting chapter tactics. They've said that we're going to get similar stratagems, but I'm hoping for some really cool stuff as well, where like
high fleet,
you know, we are going to get that. But one of the big weaknesses with them right now, and part of the reason why I have like that ugly sideways grin when I take Tyranids to tournaments is if I face two or three Storm Ravens, I don't really have the ability to take them off. I just don't. We don't have access to dropping a vehicle like that effectively at all. So they're not as much in the meta right now, but there needs to be something for that. And I don't want to take a list with 20 Biovores, by the way, and be like, of course I have options. Now, you know, the Swarm, you know, with this stratagem, I reroll the hit and they do D3 mortal wounds.
Is a flying tyrant just not a good aerial assault unit?
It's okay, but what do they have? 8 or 9 wounds, 5 up invul, 3 up save, moves 20 inches or something like that, or maybe it's 12. It's like okay, but any round of fire from that list at all.
Got it, yeah.
Just kills it. 100%. And then when it gets into close combat with the Storm Raven, it's not like it returns the favor. It doesn't drop the Storm Raven. It maybe does 5 or 6 wounds.
Yeah, so you want some teeth back in the list. And I think that's a reasonable thing to request.
Some teeth or answer or that just has to be taken into account, I guess, just dealing with flyers. It's really funny, not to be too much of a whiner, but like the Forge World stuff is problematic because it's overly powerful. Then you look at the Tyranid Forge World stuff and you're like, 810 points for a Harridan that's like objectively worse than a knight for half the... It's like so bad. And then there's the Malanthrope, which is a gem. It's like probably the best HQ Tyranids have. But give me something sexy, you know?
I'm with you, man. Well, Jeff, thanks for coming on and speaking with me about this stuff. It's always nice to pick your brain.
Oh, it's great to be here.
About competitive 40K. I'm on the East Coast, you're on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And there are different play styles between the two coasts. And, you know, we meet in the middle sometimes at various tournaments, but there's just a whole radical different approach to list building that, well, I shouldn't say radical. There are differences enough to where it's noticeable.
Absolutely.
And it's fun to talk about. Where can people find you? Because you're active on Twitter. You have a Twitch stream. You've got, you do lots of stuff. So if people aren't already aware, where can they find you?
Thanks. I'm In Control TV on YouTube. I do some list review stuff. It's not consistent. It's not directed. It's just kind of on a whim and when I think it's fun. But I want to talk Terranids. I'm going to do some AdMech stuff. And then on Twitter and Twitch, I'm In Control TV there as well. And I've been streaming some Total Warhammer 2 lately, which is really fun. Just came out today.
Dude, I probably played way too many hours of that today.
It's great.
I meant to ask you about that. Do you actually have some extra time? Because let's talk about that. Okay.
What are you playing? Which faction did you start with?
Okay, I started with the Dark Elves.
Me too. That's too cool. They're too cool. Malekith, I didn't know he actually had a model by so I'm a Warhammer Fantasy nub. I didn't know this, but when I played Total Warhammer 1, it had an amazing effect of, like, I kind of wanted to start an army. Like, it had that effect on me.
I liked it, man. I mean, it's not Age of Sigmar, and it's a little bit kind of like the old Warhammer Fantasy Battle type army. But it's got a cool story, and there's elements to it that I didn't know that were going to be in there, like the terrain actually has an effect on how well your troops perform. There's a social element, you know, that you have to keep, you know, a loyalty and a morale element. I mean, there's a lot going on. What stuck out to you? Because you probably play more of these games than I do, but to me, this looked like a very, very solid game.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with a couple things. Like, it just makes you – the different armies have different mechanics for how they do their economy, for how they – kind of like manage themselves, their army styles. Like, for instance, the vampire counts don't have almost any range or any at all, I think it is. But at the same time, when their leader gets on the bone dragon and some of the stuff, like, they're one of the most powerful armies in that way. So there's a really cool flavor to a lot of it. And then I've heard, I think, again, with me not having a background in Fantasy Warhammer, I can't speak to this too much from my own experience, but from what I hear, people really enjoy that they're very thematically close to the armies as well. Like, if you're a Skaven fan, your Skaven are pretty freaking Skaven, and people like that. And it's just really fun and exciting that way.
The graphics are great. I mean, I know we live in a modern time where, imagination is kind of caught up with technology or whatever, but our technology is caught up to imagination to some degree. But even the way the map lays out, every area of the map is very themed towards the faction, and it's spot on.
Yep. Yeah, and it's massive too. Total Warhammer 2's map in particular. Like, I thought Total Warhammer 1 was large, but then I look at the map on 2, and you could have a campaign, if you want, that is like 120 hours, 200 hours, and you could, for the most part, be doing different things that entire time, which is an incredible statement. It definitely gets to a place where you're auto-resolving a lot of fights, because it's towards the end of the game, you're either getting your butt handed to you, or you're handing the butt to the other guy, I guess. Which is like the only criticism, but, you know, find me a game that has perfect balance for the entirety of 120 plus hours.
Well, it's a bit of a builder game, so you are building up your army, and so if you line up everything perfectly, you're going to be able to recruit a lot, get big armies, they're going to be successful and level up, and you can kind of start to steamroll. But there's also a lot of, I only played for several hours today, and I'll be honest, Malekith did die for a couple of turns.
It can happen.
But then when he came back, I like spent a lot of time leveling him up, where he like repelled a whole Skaven army by himself.
Yeah.
So
I did one of the story missions and just was like, my army was, I thought, when in like AMU form, and I actually lost it because it's an ambush. It's the second story mission. So he didn't die, he retreated, but I guess it's kind of the same for him.
Yeah, but I like it. I mean, I'm enjoying the different, because I felt like you mentioned that I've only played the Dark Elves, but it was very themed towards, because there's a seeming level of intrigue to it, because you're having to, because it gives you little updates about your warlords, your characters. It tells you what they're thinking, how they're feeling, and what the rumors are about them or whatever. And it kind of gives you a little bit of a sense of urgency in gameplay on every turn. And it's turn based. Like, you plug in what your characters are going to do and your armies are going to do and what you're going to build. And then you advance the game turn by turn. And you get a little bit of a glimpse of what all the other factions are doing around you. And then there's some element about what's going on in your own backyard.
Yeah, it's really fun. Just a great game.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much time you invest. Clearly, I invested a chunk of time in it today, but I'm impressed. I'm probably going to play, you know, when I should be doing other things tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. And they know how to get you, too. Like they've already said in a month or so time, it will combine with Total Warhammer 1 for a grand campaign experience of all of these races together.
God, that's crazy.
And they're going to do it with Total Warhammer 3, which is already, you know, it's been announced as well.
Well, it's a great game. It's it kind of covers a little bit of the bases to where it's not really a Twitch game. I'm sorry, not Twitch is in the channel, but like a fast Twitch
speed game, right?
Reaction game. But you do have to, if you get really good at controlling your forces and attacking from the flank or knowing when to support another unit, it looks like you can have some actual control in the outcome of the battle. That is in excess of what your maybe the stats of your troops are.
Yeah, and it's fun because it's not obviously a turn for turn exact thing, but you know, in Age of Sigmar, if you flank somebody, there's bonuses to that. If you're having someone get hit by range units, they may or may not be durable to that, or you know, there's weaknesses, there's strengths, there's heavies charging into spears is a thing. So there's a lot of strategy, and like you said, it's not necessarily a speed game in the way that you will succeed in like a game of StarCraft based off of how fast you are. But if you make the right choices, you have your units in the right place, and you control a battle really well, you're rewarded for that, which is a really cool feeling.
I think there's different modes of gameplay too. Like I believe there's a co-op mode.
Yeah.
Where you can go through it with a buddy online. I mean, they've thought of a lot and put it in this game.
Yep. The co-op's funny though, because your friend will control the AI's computers and fight you in each battle. Oh,
okay.
So that's cool, but it's also like, you son of a... You know, they do a really good job. They're just kind of slowing you down and stopping you.
Oh, it's like, oh, why'd you ambush me now?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's what kind of messed me up in my first run through, just trying to figure out the controls. I like parked my army next to a city that had like 1,000 people in it, and they ran out and
yep.
and murdered me. But that's before I kind of figured out that all this stuff is going on. You know, in between, I think this was like turn 3 or whatever. I was just looking around at the map, because you get all the cool things on the map to look at. But it's a fun game. I'm looking forward to doing more.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good time we live in right now, where you can play some nice Warhammer games, and the tabletop's great.
Oh man, I did sidetrack you though. You were telling us where folks could find you.
Oh no, that's it. It's just
are you going to be streaming TV. This?
Yeah, I've been streaming since Wednesday.
That's awesome. I will tune in because I need some tips. Okay, just tell me what do I need to build to get a Dark Elf hero.
Oh, man. I don't know the name of the buildings. I'm actually kind of a Total Warhammer noob, but I just put a lot of hours into it and just kind of do the natural progression. I think one of the big recommendations for me is a lot of this game is like you will get backdoored by even insta-spawning chaos stacks, and intervention forces can get bought as you're doing the progression for the story mode. So you want to be building the defensive structures in each of your cities and probably leaving a general behind who their entire job is to clean up rebellions and stop people from interrupting everything.
I think that's a good tip. So just like somebody near in the home base or whatever, one of your whatever city you're building up the most.
The main province, yeah, probably.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I'll take that. I will take that as solid advice.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, hopefully I'm going to reach out to you in the next little bit and get you back on, and we'll talk more of this stuff.
Yeah, I'd love to, man. This is great. Thanks for having me.
Dude, man, have a good rest of your night.
All right, you too.
Make my day.